Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome back to New Books in Jewish Studies. I'm your host, Max Kaiser. We have a great show for you today. With us, we have Ruth von Bernuth, Associate Professor in the Department of Germanic and Slavic Languages and Literatures and Director of the Carolina Center for Jewish Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She's here to talk about her new book, How the Wise Men Got to Chelm, The Life and Times of a Yiddish Folk Tradition, published in 2016 by New York University Press. Ruth, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Max, for having me.
So first of all, how did you come to write this book? And also, if you could introduce the listeners to the genre of Chelm stories.
Okay, let's start with the Chelm stories first, because there are endless, so I can only give you a short introduction, and then probably everyone else could add more. It is actually stories about a town full of fools. This is at least what the people believe from the outside. The question is sometimes, who are the fools? The people from the outside or the people who live in Chelm? But in Yiddish tradition and also beyond Yiddish literature, Chelm is believed to be the place where sometimes the stupid, but maybe also the wisest of the wise live. So I didn't grow up with Chelm stories, but I was introduced to them when I took a Yiddish course in Oxford. It was a Yiddish summer school there. And one of my classmates actually said, you have to work on Chelm if you're interested in fools. At the time, I was just beginning to write my dissertation, which was on natural fools. So there's a very different kind of fools, and especially about a court fool from the 16th century who was believed to be like a prophet or a wonder of nature. And we would probably call those people nowadays mentally challenged people. So there was a really different kind of foolishness. But he said, you need to look into Chelm. And when I finished my dissertation, I thought, oh, that might be a good idea now to maybe venture out a little bit into other foolish studies. And actually, I was introduced in Yiddish. And my idea was to write a book about the connection between German and Yiddish literature between the 15th to the 18th century. I had planned one chapter on Chelm when I discovered that Chelm stories are very similar to stories of a German book which was written at the end of the 16th century. And then I came to Israel. I was on a fellowship, and I thought maybe I start to write the last chapter of this long study and have Chelm as sort of the end, looking into the modern world of Yiddish. What happened was actually that every week I promised my colleagues and friends, next week you will have the chapter on Chelm, but I never came up with a chapter, and they started to tell me, this is going to be a nice book, it's so much material you have, and they were right. So in the end, I made it into a book.
So your first chapter is titled How the Wise Men Got to Gotham. And it looks at the place of these stories in post-war and also contemporary Jewish culture in America. Why did you begin here, and how did the wise men get to Gotham?
Oh, that's a good question. So actually, when I had written most chapters of the book, I approached the press and we talked about it. And there was one chapter left, which was a modern chapter, and it's New York University Press. And I thought maybe I can feature New York in it, because New York, as the city of Gotham, is the also Gotham is the city of the English or British fools. So I thought that maybe a good last chapter. That was the original order. And then one of my readers suggested, why don't you start with a chapter with stories most of your readers will be familiar with, and then venture out into the 15th, 16th century with a lot of unfamiliar stories and unfamiliar texts. And so this is how this order came into being. So I start indeed with New York as a place where actually after the war, a lot of stories about the wise men of Chem were written both in Yiddish, but also in English. And so it was a good place to start. And in the 19th century, actually, the notion came into being that New York is a foolish place. And then they used this word from England.
So can you tell us a bit more about the stories in post-war and contemporary Jewish culture?
Yes, I mean, there are many takes on this, and that's what I try to put into this chapter. I would like to maybe mention two different writers, very famous Yiddish writers I look into. One is Yud-Yud Trunk, who wrote a story about the wise men of Chelm, and actually he uses this in order to commemorate the Polish Jewry, which was just tragically dead by the time he wrote this book. But this is the entire book. It is about Chelm, but it's actually about also a monument to the Polish Jews. He writes it in Yiddish, publishes in Buenos Aires, because there were more readers at the time when it was published than in New York. And unfortunately, this book was never translated. It's really a treasure. I highly can recommend to read this. That's the only Chelm novel, actually, the real Chelm novel we have. He has chapters, and it's an ongoing story with a lot of puns towards religious Jewish life, but also Polish life and the mud of the Polish streets you would find in a Polish shtetl. This is one. And then the other one, a lot of people are familiar with him. It's Isaac Bashevis-Singer, the Nobel Prize winner, who wrote children's stories, Chelm stories. They were translated into English. They're well known. They were translated into other languages as well, French and German. And other languages. So everyone is more or less familiar with the Singer Chelm stories. But what I discovered by looking into newspapers and that actually there are earlier Chelm stories by Singer, and they were actually meant and geared towards adults. And they're political stories. It's a very non-Jewish Chelm, actually, he's describing. So it's that Jewish religion doesn't play a role at all. It is more a history of mankind, he describes. He starts with the beginning and how the world was created, and then goes on. And there is they have an emperor in Chelm. There is a white Chelm and a red Chelm. They have a wall in Chelm. So there's a lot of contemporary relations and puns he's using, and they're actually really funny and also interesting to read. I always thought, as a literary scholar of mainly medieval, early modern literatures, it's hard to find those books from the 16th, 17th century, but actually I found out that finding Singer stories from in the forwards is much harder even. I never had a printed copy in my hand. I had to go into microfilms and then digitalized versions of it, but I was never able to hold a paper copy in my hand, which was a funny side effect of my research.
Yeah, you would have thought that there would be plenty of paper copies available, considering its large circulation at one time. So going back to the book, you turn to look at the foundations of European foolish culture in the late Middle Ages, including how this was figured within Jewish culture. Tell us a bit about this.
Yes, because I think that's very important. In order to understand how those stories emerged and from which culture they come from, or cultures, I probably should say, I wanted to look into what is a foolish culture, because I think this is what the 15th, 16th century is very much about. You find a lot of literature at the time in which you have a lot of jokes, but at the same time, a very serious content. And that's often goes together, which is hard for us to understand, because we tend to divide literature into, oh, this is the serious hypo literature, and this is the lesser popular culture. And I think that's what we have to bear in mind, that this is not true for this time period. So what I wanted to describe is how Jews actually participated and also used this carnivalesque, I'm using a term coined by Bakhtin, a culture in order to also create literature and even an own culture. And so that's what I venture out. This is very much far away from Chelm. I'm aware of this, and I know that some readers commented on this. But I need this, as I said, this is the foundation. And I really think I could show that fools play an enormous and a big role in Jewish culture of the late Middle Ages and the early modern period.
So in chapter 3, you look at the Schildberger book. Tell us a bit about this.
The Schildberger book, this is the German chapbook I talked about already. That's the book which was written at the end of the 16th century. It is actually an anti-utopian story. It is rewrites Thomas More's Utopia in a way that it describes a group of people, actually people who live in a certain town, which is called Schildburg. The men in this town venture out. They serve in many courts and all over the world. The women are really not happy about this, and they write a letter to the men and say, you have to come back home. It's not going well here, and you need to help us. And they use this text, it has a lot of puns in it, and they say, this is just, we are lonely even in our beds. So anyway, so the men come back and they say, what do we do? We have always helped the foreign kings and courts. What can we do that they don't call us any longer? And they come up with the idea, let's behave like fools. And then this decision actually becomes their second nature. And in the end, they're real fools. And that's what the book describes. So they build a town hall without windows. And then they try to bring in light, and they take a box and shuffle sunlight into it. And they carry it into the town hall. They actually try to chop wood on a hill, then carry it down. Then a foreigner comes, a stranger comes and says, why do you do this? You could have just roll it down. And they say, oh, okay, good idea. So they carry it up again and let it roll down. And all kind of stories, people who are familiar with the Chelm's tradition know some of those stories as well, because that's then the longer way of how it was then translated into Yiddish. I think we will touch on this in a few moments. So that's a book was very successful. It was reworked many times and was actually popular until the early 20th century. It's still around. If you would describe something going on in the administration, for instance, in Germany, you would still use, oh, they behave like the Schildburgers. Children nowadays in Germany are not so familiar with those stories, but again, the word is still around, so people are still familiar with it.
Well, that's very interesting. So, you mentioned that, in chapter 4, you turned to look at the four surviving old Yiddish translations of the Schildberger book. Tell us about these translations.
So what is interesting, it takes a little bit longer. We don't know exactly when the earliest book was printed in Yiddish, because this is lost. So that's what we know. That the but we have throughout the 18th century, we have four different editions. The second one, printed in Amsterdam in 1727, is the, I would say, the most important one, because the Yiddish redactor or author, or translator, really reworked the text. And he was not shy to add rhymes or to even add, sometimes change the stories a little bit. We have a tendency, which is also true for other old Yiddish texts, that some of the more Christian or non-kosher things are left out, but still they still go to church, so that's still in the book. So we have both. So they don't go to a bath on Saturday, but on Sunday. But still, as I said, they go to church, listen to a sermon. That's not a problem at all to bring this into Yiddish. I think it must have been a quite successful book, because it was reprinted at the end of the 18th century again, and then it made it probably into Eastern Europe. I'm still trying to locate a copy of one of those prints in one of the Eastern European libraries. I couldn't do this so far, but I'm sure that it was distributed there.
Great. So you, in chapter 5, you look at how the idea of the foolish sage persisted into German literature of the Enlightenment period, and how these Enlightenment reworkings influenced the Jewish Maskilim. Tell us a bit about this.
Yeah, this is a sort of a little bit of a detour. Actually, what I should say is that this book describes not only the emergence of the Chelm stories, but actually describes also how the Schildburger Buch, the German version, evolved over the time. And this is hasn't done before, because German literature and literary studies are usually divided between those who do medieval, early modern studies, and then the others who do modern literature. And therefore, to put the two or the various time periods together is rather unusual. And so what I actually do, I use Christoph Martin Wieland, who is a German writer of the Enlightenment, who reworks heavily the Schildburger Buch. You would hardly recognize the stories. But still, he has references, and I think it's very clear that he refers to the Schildburger Buch as one of his founding texts. I use him, and he's very important because he became very influential and was a well-read author by the Maskilim, especially those who lived in Eastern Europe. They regarded him highly as an author, and so his history of the Abderites became an important example. And so what he actually does, just to give you, just to show you how different the text is, he doesn't use Schildburg anymore as a place name. He uses Abdera, the ancient Abdera, where he thinks the fools live. And it was so popular that the Maskilim used Abdera as in order to describe the Eastern European world. Especially Brody is often used as the modern Jewish Abdera. Josef Pell and others imagined themselves as being living in Abdera and being the only philosophers who are true and understand how the world goes, but all around them are the town around them is full of fools. And that's actually a setting which we find already in Wieland, which we don't find in the book before. In the tradition before, we don't have anyone who's wise or is opposite to the people who live in the town. We don't have this tension, but Wieland introduces this, and this is the Maskilim take this on and think that's exactly their role. That's how they think they are depicted and seen in their own Jewish shtetl or Jewish town.
So in chapter 6, you look at how imaginary foolish places came to be associated with real towns. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I always like to say to my students that 19th century likes to pin everything down. They try, the scholars in the 19th century really try to find everything on a map, on the real map. So in the 19th century, the notion came into being that Schildburg is actually a real town in Saxony. It's Schilda. And we have many books, actually, early scholars in German studies try to identify and to reason why Schilda in Germany is the real Schildburg. And they don't even get the that Schildburg is a fictitious town and that you don't need to find it on a map in order to talk about it. But for them, it's really, as I said, very important. So what happens is in the course of the 19th century, this becomes nationalized. So Schilda is then not only seen as a German town of fools, but it's sort of a German non-Jewish town of fools, whereas Jews were associated to be fools in towns like Fürth or Prague or Brody, for instance. But that's a very differentiation which takes place at the end of the 19th century. And then there are various things happening, which is described already in the previous chapter, also that we have was a Maskil Isaac Meir Dick, who is a famous Yiddish writer, or the grandfather of Yiddish literature, as he's sometimes called, who lives in Vilna and is very, very friendly towards the Russian influence and culture. He's not a friend of Polish Jews. And he is actually the one who starts to use the German Schildburger Buch and the stories. And I'm pretty much sure that he was either knew the German stories or he even knew the Yiddish text. I unfortunately couldn't prove this because we don't have a possession of his library. But he uses the Schildburger stories. And then he says this very earliest text he writes is the wisdom of a certain town, Ches or Chet, which then within a couple of years becomes then associated with Chelm. His hint towards Chelm has also a political dimension because, as I said, he was not in favor of Polish Jews, and I think he is making fun of Polish Jews. So when the first stories come into being, folklorists easily pick up on them, saying, "Oh, that's a real Jewish place of fools. That's not like the German Schilda, but this is now we have a place for the Jewish fools." Interestingly, there is nothing like this in the Polish notion of this. So someone who is well versed in Polish culture would not know that Chelm is a place of the fools, but it's very well known, of course, in Jewish culture.
I'm wondering if you could tell the listeners about the story that you start your book with about the visiting Israeli academics, because I think that indicates this sort of clash between imaginary foolish place and real place very, very well.
Yeah, actually, this is a story, and I'm so sorry because I cannot tell it like Chava Tunyansky, my Yiddish teacher and mentor in Israel. She is just the best storyteller ever. And whenever you meet her, especially in the National Library, I had this various times you find her, she would sit and then she starts to tell a joke and she starts in Hebrew and then ends in Yiddish or sometimes in Spanish. And it's wonderful. So I try my best. Chava Tunyansky went to Poland together with a group of other Israeli scholars to visit Poland, and they finally arrived in Chelm, and everyone is so excited about this because nobody would believe that there is a real Chelm. And that's what I actually encountered in Israel many times, that I would tell people I work on Chelm stories and they said, "Oh yeah, that's interesting," and then I would mention, "Oh yes, and I've been to Chelm," and they look at me like, "How can you have been to Chelm? This is not a real place." And I said, "No, actually there is a Polish town called Chelm." So they all very excited. There's this bus full of Israeli scholars. Thinks everyone wants to take something back home to prove that they've been in Chelm. So they line up in front of a tiny kiosk on the marketplace. to buy a souvenir. And the Polish people at the time, and the, with the time of the rationing, they think, oh, there must be something very rare we cannot usually buy. So they line up as well. And they had no idea why the Israelis would line up, whereas they really thought there would be probably something like whatever, coffee, bananas, or something else. So that's what Chava did. And this is why I actually had her souvenir as a picture in the book. So whenever you open the book, the very first image is this this tiny pennant from Chelm from 1984.
Yeah, that's a great story. So your final chapter explores the surge in Chelm stories during and after World War One. Tell us about why there was this surge and also how these stories have been used to critique Jewish society.
Yeah, it's an interesting shift. Or we have a couple of Jewish foolish towns, as I mentioned before, but only after World War One, when in Poland there is a lively Jewish culture and the lot is printed also in Yiddish, and we have many Yiddish newspapers. There is a folklorist, Menachem Kipnis, who starts to write stories about Chelm as the city of fools, and he publishes in the Hind, in the daily Yiddish newspaper printed in Warsaw. And this becomes very popular. There are a lot of stories. There are over 80 stories he publishes there. And the people from Chelm don't like it at all. So they complain, actually. They write to the newspaper, please stop doing this. We cannot marry off our children. So he has this larger collection of those stories, which then actually sets Chelm really on the map. And then after he had published this, nobody else would question that Chelm is a city of fools. He is describing Chelm, especially in the newspaper articles. What I discovered, that he published later a book as well, but then he took out all the references to the so-called real Chelm. In the newspaper articles, he really refers to also current events and mentions that he been to Chelm as a correspondent for the newspaper. What was the second part of your question? I'm sorry.
Oh, just about how the stories were used to critique Jewish society.
Yeah, I think that Chelm is, I like to describe it as like a joker. You can use Chelm for any purpose. So we will have someone, for instance, we have a Soviet Yiddish writer, he uses Chelm in order to critique Jewish life and Jewish religion, and he has, it's called anti-clerical Volksmeises, so anti-clerical stories, and he doesn't critique actually the people of Chelm, but only the rabbi, and the rabbi becomes the goal of his critique. We have, as I said already, and I mentioned also Singer, who uses this as a critique towards capitalism and socialism and communism. We have Tonk, who commemorates it and uses Chelm. And then we have this huge literature and vast literature of Chelm stories in actually children's literature. And I think this is actually a tool which is used to teach about Jewish culture and religion. And there we have also, of course, we have religious Chelm stories for children, and we have completely non-religious stories for children. And so everyone uses Chelm, and that's what I like about Chelm so much.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for talking to us about your great book today, Ruth. Before we let you go, would you be able to tell us a little bit about what you're working on next?
I'm happy to do this. I would like to mention two projects, a smaller one and a bigger one. The bigger one, as I mentioned before, that I was actually writing a larger, working on a larger project on Yiddish and German literature of the late Middle Ages and the early modern period. And I still have some chapters left. So one of the chapters, which is probably going to be a larger project, is Yiddish translations of the Bible based not on Hebrew texts, but on the German Christian Bible, especially Protestant Bibles. And this is very interesting. And for the over 20 texts I have located so far, which use the German texts and, of course, change them as well. It's a very different topic from Chelm, but it's a very but very interesting one. And we have especially books which are not part of the Jewish canon. So this means they're not part of the Hebrew Bible, like the Book of Judith, the Book of Susanna, and the Maccabees, for instance. But they are translated into Yiddish, printed in several editions, and they wait for me to be read line by line. And I have a couple of smaller projects connected to the Chelm book, which I couldn't put into the Chelm book, but by which I still want to work on. One is at least an article about Herschel, the Fool, because I cannot leave the fools completely on their own. And I want to look into the emergence of the Herschel stories, because that is seems to be a more complicated story. So far, the legend goes that Herschel was the court fool of the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. This is probably not true, and that's what I would like to look into more closely.
Well, they sound like great projects, and we certainly hope to have you back on New Books in Jewish Studies in the future. So thanks very much for talking with us today, Ruth. You've been listening to New Books in Jewish Studies with your host, Max Kaiser. And with us today, we had Ruth von Bernuth, and she talked to us about her new book, How the Wise Men Got to Chelm, The Life and Times of Yiddish Folk Tradition, published in 2016 by New York University Press. Thanks very much.
Thank you.